Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, and we're going to focus mostly on the sports fans of this. This is a special Get a Grip episode. I'm Shane Bacon with Max Homa. Max, normally not a midweek release. Even though we lied and said we were going to do it last week, we're going to do this not on golf. This is about The Last Dance, which we figured every other media person in the world was talking about it. Why don't two golf guys do it?
Yeah, we got to fit in, man. That's the whole podcast game, running over each other's toes. We got to get in on this. Probably the coolest series of anything I've ever watched. I was thinking in my head yesterday, it might have even topped Harry Potter for me as a complete
wow.
set. Man, that it might be because the times needed something to watch, but my gosh, beginning to end, I think I liked it more as it went along, which I guess is pretty difficult to do. Especially, it's one of those things, man. Very rare do you watch something knowing the ending and you're still really excited. Like, I knew it was coming. I knew the main stories. I knew the flu game. I knew all these things. There's a bunch in between I didn't quite know the intricacies of it. But, I mean, in general, I knew it was happening and it was still exhilarating.
Yeah, I agree with you. I had a call with a buddy of mine today who's a big NBA fan. He's actually in an NBA chat you and I participate in on the regular. I think you might ignore it at times because it gets a little busy during certain sporting events. But, he was telling me that he didn't love it as much because he knew so much about the things that had happened. I almost feel the opposite. As somebody that I consider myself a sports fan, I'm somebody that's, you know, I feel like I'm well-read on basketball. There were a lot of things in this, especially the last two, three, four episodes that I didn't remember, I didn't know. And I want to start with this. Max, do you remember how many clutch shots Michael Jordan hit? Because it seemed like there were two a series.
Unbelievable. I mean, he's a mythical character to anyone who probably wasn't, you know, born maybe in the 70s where you remember all of it coming up. You lived like how I guess I would live right now watching sports, how I'll remember, I guess, LeBron James and Kobe. He hit so many unbelievable shots. I do think that was a little more surprising, too, is in that last series, especially. And the last playoffs, especially, was all the I guess everyone else other than Michael Jordan is a role player on that team. They did unbelievable stuff. There were montages at the end of that last in the 98 series. Tons of Luke Longley and obviously Pippen, Rodman doing his thing. Kerr, like, I didn't remember all that. You do picture Michael made a ton of shots. I mean, no doubt. I'm not taking that away from him. But it's still a team game.
Right.
And like they really did. Come like into their own. I think the first 3 years that they won, the first three-peat they had, I do think he carried like the whole load. I thought the last 3 years, it was definitely more team, still way more Michael than everybody else, but like definitely more team. But I'm with you. I'm glad I was naive to a lot of this, or at least ignorant to a lot of this. I was cool learning so many things that I just don't have any memory of. I don't remember the Pacers series being that intense. Like I remember, you know, the Reggie and Michael stuff being pretty contentious, but I do not remember, like, man, watching that, I'm like, dang, I don't know if they're gonna win this thing.
Yeah, I first thing first about that series in particular, and I feel like there's a recency bias of 9 and 10 because we just watched them on Sunday when Jalen was going through the roster and he was naming the players on that Pacers team. That team was dirty and deep. You know, I think he went 6 or 7 people before he mentioned Chris Mullin, which I know it was a latter part of Mullen's career. You know, I mean, Mullin is a guy that was more of in his prime in the early 90s. But, I mean, this team was stacked. And you talk about the Bulls team and the role players stepping up and improving their games in these big moments. You know, the Pacers, I don't really feel like there were role players in that starting five. All those guys, you know, had championship pedigree, if you will.
Yeah, Jalen didn't even talk about himself.
He didn't say himself.
Jalen's an animal. I mean, that was crazy. I was waiting for him to kind of say, and me, and he didn't even have to. I mean, he could have, but he didn't even have to because of how great everybody else on the team was. I love Jalen Rose. I love Jalen Rose. Anytime he talks, it's just captivating. It's smart. It's well thought out. His points, very often, you know, maybe his like predictions come true. Like, he is a very smart guy. So it's cool to have him on this just because I feel like he adds a huge part to this. I know, you know, when you're watching, especially if you, you know, somebody that remembered a lot more, I have no malice towards Reggie Miller. A lot of people who are big Bulls fans, big Michael Jordan fans do. So I thought it was a good other voice to have as Jalen. Even like, I thought my favorite part probably of the last two episodes was when Jalen's talking, he goes, that, you know, Reggie hits a shot, we go nuts, and I'm yelling, somebody put a camera on Larry Bird, show Larry Bird's face, and then they cut to it perfectly as the editing was perfect the whole time, and Larry is the most stoic human there could have been. I mean, that was lovely, lovely commentary, and well done by the entire crew that put together this documentary.
So my takeaway from 10 episodes of a deep dive, and listen, any critique of this thing, you know, if there weren't enough things about Jordan, I've listened to some podcasts today about parts of this. You know, I wish they would have showed more family stuff. To me, this was about the basketball season, and then it branched out from there. At least that's what it looks like, the presentation. If you were going to look, you know, kind of at a first iteration of how this rundown was going to go, it was about the basketball team, Michael Jordan, and then we'll expand. And I thought they did a great job about that. My big takeaway is I believe that Michael Jordan is the most competitive person to ever live in modern society. You know, like, I mean, you'd have to go back to, you know, like Roman days or the Aztecs to find someone that was so obsessed with conquering everybody. I feel like Jordan is that modern day person. I don't think, and this is at least my opinion, I don't think Tiger has ever been there before. In terms of that want to find reasons to want to kill people. You know, I want to ruin your life. It wasn't just, I want to win. It was, I mean, you know, we always hear the step on the throat thing. He was jumping on people's throat. And, you know, he was making up reasons to do that. I just feel like his competitiveness is in a space alone in this world we've lived in.
I agree. I'm going to add Kobe Bryant into it. I think Michael, and we haven't seen a lot of documentaries about Kobe, so maybe he did a lot similar, but we got a lot of Michael Jordan saying, you know, people were joking with like the drink when Michael says like, you know, then I had to prove him wrong, or then, you know, it put a chip on my shoulder. You know, that was, no, Lacey said that, you know, that was personal to me, you know, and it became personal. It's like he said that a lot. He definitely contrived a lot of stuff in his head. I'm going to say Kobe, I don't even know if he needed to do that. Like, I feel like Kobe just had it, you know, especially, you know, the Kobe Shaq years when Shaq goes, I could win a, you know, I don't need you to win a championship, or people were saying, I don't need you to win a championship. Kobe was like, all right, get the hell off the team then. I'll win with it. Like he had that fire. I feel like, all the way through, very similar to Michael Jordan. But yeah, Michael was something else, man, that you couldn't, there was no right way to approach him. George Karl doesn't say hi to him at dinner and Michael gets mad. I bet you if he says hi to Michael, Michael goes, I cannot believe that guy thinks he could say hi to me right when we're about to play. Like, I don't feel like there's a right way to go about it. I think a lot of this too is just trumped by the fact that I thought Kerr said it perfectly. And this is how I like live, I think I live my life and how I approach sports. I'm going to cut, you know what? I'm going to cut back. And cut back in just like the documentary does. I'm making everybody dizzy.
Do you want to tell the years before and then we'll go back
yesterday.
And forth?
Yesterday. Okay, I tweeted, you know, I feel very fortunate to, after watching this documentary, I feel very fortunate to be able to play golf against Tiger Woods. People said, you know, somebody called me Scott Burrell. Somebody said Tiger and Tiger and Michael Jordan would never say something like this. I want to, two things. One, I know I'm not either. I will never change the landscape of my sport, which both of them did. Tiger more so even than Michael Jordan.
Right.
The other, though, is, and this is where I'm going to wind it back to the documentary. Steve Kerr said that he was just as competitive and had the same drive as Michael Jordan. He wanted to get the absolute most out of himself. And that's exactly what Michael does. But he pointed out, I'm just not as good as Michael Jordan. Like, but the point is, the reason I wake up every day, the reason a lot of people who play sports wake up every day, but what keeps me going is I want to see the best I can be. The cool part about Michael, in my opinion, the coolest part about Michael is he does the same thing, but already has all the talent in the world to be the best. He would have been the best without probably a lot of drive. Like I really, like a lot of these stories, like, oh, you know, he came to school and he wasn't the best player on the team. And 2 weeks later, he was like, I don't care how hard you work. That's not a real thing. Like, that means he's just better than basically everybody. But what's cool is he gets to the mountaintop and just pushes to be so much better. He was pushing to be so much better than everybody that you couldn't give somebody an MVP without him freaking out about it in his head. Like, no way. Like, and it was true. So that's the part to me that touches home that I took away so much of. It's like, you know what, man, if you ever get to the top, whether your top is, you know, winning a PGA Tour event, whether your top is, you know, being valedictorian in your school, be like, push further, because the best ever at his sport pushed even further on after that. And I think that's so cool because it does get looked over a little too much. Like people like Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr is the same DNA as Michael Jordan after listening to this stuff. He tough as nails, never backed down, had the grit and had the grind and pushed himself just like Michael did, but he had a lot less to work with. Very similar to basically going back to people chirping me, everybody compared to Tiger minus maybe like two people I can even think of. It's like, that's a big jump. I'm still pushing myself. I can still tweet about this. I can still be appreciative that I get to play golf with Tiger Woods. Yep. Doesn't mean I'm going to back down him when I play, but yeah, I know I'm not going to change the landscape of my sport. So sure, maybe Tiger would never say that, but I do think that it's worth saying. So I took that away. I like seeing Steve Kerr as the kind of pull like the parallel to Michael, where just because you don't have what Michael has, you can still push yourself, and then the vice versa. Like Michael has it all and he's still pushing it. Like that's why I love him and that's why I love Kobe so much.
Yeah, there's a famous story about, you know, Tiger out grinding on the range and John Daly, you know, making a comment back when Daly was playing on the PGA Tour about, man, you know, really grinding, you know, Tiger's number one in the world. And he goes, you know, he said to Daly, if I had your natural talent, I wouldn't have to work this hard. You know, and I mean, that to your point, Tiger has that natural ability. He has obviously has natural ability. He was hitting golf balls on a TV show and he's two. But, you know, I mean, in his mind, it's I have to outwork everybody. And, you know, to your point, Max, say Tiger's ceiling's 30 feet and your ceiling's 20 feet. You know, it's your decision as a professional athlete in this sport to make sure that you get to 20 feet in your ceiling. And if Tiger's is 30, Tiger's is 30. There's nothing you can do about that 10 feet. But if you only get to 15 feet, that's just you not working as hard, right? I mean, that's you not out there doing what Tiger's doing. If Tiger's out there for 12 hours and you're out there for 12 hours, he's going to see that. He's going to respect it. And on any given day, it's a little like what you talked about a couple episodes ago about playing against Rory and playing in the Wells Fargo when you won. Is if you play Rory heads up every single day for a month, you know, maybe you win 12 out of 30 matches, but you have to A, believe you can win 12 out of 30, and B, know you've worked hard enough to show him your best. And that's, I think that's important. And it's important. It's something I feel like you pride yourself on, is you have busted your ass to get to where you are. And you're going to continue to bust your ass, not you know, let up because you got there.
Yeah. And it's like this Michael Jordan resonates with so many people for, I think, this exact reason. Well, especially what we're talking about the ceiling, the perfect example you just used, 30th floor, 20th floor. If I make it to the 19th floor and I could have been on the 20th floor, like I am doing myself a disservice. If Tiger brings himself to the 29th floor, a floor no one's ever seen before, no one knows anything about even the 27th, the 28th floor, but he could have been on the 30th. He's doing himself a disservice. Like everyone has a different ceiling. Now, I don't know what my ceiling is. Maybe mine is the 30th floor. I assume mine's not Tiger. I mean, just the whole story's going on about like him from like two to whatever. He's making 40 when he's like 4 years old. Like I wasn't doing that. But I'm not a very goal oriented person as far as like, you know, what's your goal this year? Mine's never been to win one tournament, two tournaments, because what if I win two? Like then where do I go? My goals is the grandest one is I want to meet my potential, whatever that is. I want to push myself far enough to see what that is. But like my immediate goals every day is just, I'm going to get better. I'm going to just keep getting better and see how far that takes me. And that's what I loved watching this documentary. I love being able to connect with why I do love Michael Jordan so much. Of course we love him because he's so fun to watch fly in the air. He's the prettiest basketball player that's ever played this game. And that's no question. But I liked watching the grit. I liked watching him have to come up with ideas, like you said, to give him some motivation. Because, dude, when you get to that level, I'm assuming, like, where does your motivation go? And he finds it. And that was cool. So cool to watch him do that.
Every time
my gosh, he finds it. And, like, I would even argue that the flu thing or the food poisoning thing was great for him because it gave him even a little more, like, you know, push, because now he has like this singular goal. It's why people always say beware the sick golfer, because it gives you a very singular focus. I'm going to get through this day and do my best, instead of like, you know, sometimes you can push yourself what you think is your best. And then when you're done, it's like when you go on a run or whatever, like you finish the run and it's like, man, I'm not as gassed as I feel like I should be if I'm going to run. Like I want to finish with nothing. And he started with almost nothing in the tank. So it was very obvious how hard he was going to have to push himself to get to nothing.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. So I have some observations I jotted down that I was going to bring up at some point, but you brought up the food poisoning, flu game, whatever you want to call it now. Does he call the pizza place and say, hey, it's Michael Jordan. I'd like a pepper. Like, I was so confused by that part of the story. Now, of course, this
is Tim Grover did it. It was on the Pardon My Take podcast. He actually talked about it on Pardon My Take. Tim Grover was in the room with them. MJ was like super hungry late at night, and he
right. But did he order it?
Tim did.
How did they know?
Tim said that they had been there for a week, and everyone knew Michael's like where Michael was. Like everyone at that point knew what hotel, knew the room. So of course, this is ambiguous, and who knows the true story? It's pretty. It's difficult to say that they just get. Also, I don't know how you just make food poisoning. Like, I don't think that's just like a thing you do. but like, he basically said, like, it was already sketchy that he didn't love what they were doing. And then when they ordered it and he saw like four people show up to the door, he really didn't have a good feeling about it. So it sounded just like they had been there so long. Everyone knew Michael was staying in. What I would imagine, especially back, you know, back in the day when Michael is just like, you know, where they call him Black Jesus, or he call himself Black Jesus. Like the rumors and all this information is just flying around town. So I'm guessing that's how, but of course it's still ambiguous. And it's also up in the air if that's even, you know, it was even on purpose. It's very possible those four people showed up just to see Michael Jordan.
Right.
That's also another option there.
Another observation that I loved that they showed so much in the Last Dance was, and I never knew this was a thing. I don't remember ever seeing it, video or images of this. I feel like this would be something that would be catnip for, you know, the current media landscape to show these things. How often the opposing superstars would go give love, would go say congrats, would do the hug, you know, post shower, post suit, post media, Karl Malone coming on the bus to congratulate the Bulls. That happened throughout these series. And I just found that, so cool to see. You know, we see it in golf a lot. You know, you see the guys hanging around, Tiger wins the Masters, all those guys were hanging around giving him love, obviously. But I just feel like these series were so competitive, and they would end and it's like Reggie walks by, Larry walks by, Carl comes on the bus. You know, I don't know. Personally, I found that really cool that they showed that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Golf gets this rap of like, you know, oh, wow, they're really waiting around to give him a high five. What a, you know, what a soft generation.
Yeah,
like, this exactly. has been going on. The idea is that when we peg it up on the first tee and inside those ropes, it's, hey, I'm coming for you and we don't need to be friends. But when we're done, it's not friending. It's a respect thing. Like everyone respected Michael Jordan. Jordan respected mostly everybody else too. That's why he seems to have this beef with Isaiah Thomas, because Isaiah did not reciprocate that respect. He did not give him the time of day to shake hands and all that. Like that's what it was to me. You go to battle and you go to war or whatever you want to call it, blow it up too much, exaggerate it too much. Golf obviously, you know, would be the most exaggerated to say it's like that. But the idea is that you're giving it your all and you want to drum, even if it's your best friend, you want to drum him when the lights are on. But after, you know, if somebody beats me, I'm going to, you know, shake their hand and just tell them how great it was. It doesn't make us soft. That's been happening even in the toughest of basketball generations that I know of. So, yeah, it's cool. Great point. It's cool to see because that's at the end of the day, like that's the point kind of like is we both fought as hard as we could. And one guy or one team is going to kind of come out on top. So why it's not like it's you can be bitter about it, but you still should. you know, suck it up and go over and say like, hey, congrats. But like Larry Bird perfectly in the not safe for work, not safe for podcasting line, what he basically said was, you're the man, but also I'm coming for you next year or whatever the next time I see you. I love your game and I respect you, but also I'm pissed you beat me. But I'm still going to come show you love. Like that's sports. That's why I love sports. That's why golf, especially, everybody takes off their hat, shakes everybody's hands, pre-quarantine, pre-quarantine. But that's the cool part. It's like, I don't know. That's the stuff you gotta, I don't know. That it gets overblown now, I think, with social media and seeing all, you know, I don't know why Ricky Fowler gets such heat for like waiting around to say congrats. He's a respectful person, and it's not right. Like when he was playing, he was thinking, I wonder what, you know, who I'm gonna get to. It's no, he's like, I'm trying to beat you guys too. He would expect you to do the same thing for him because that's the point.
And he would get that. I mean, if and when he wins a major championship, there are going to be a line of people because they respect him and they appreciate him. And to your point about the Isaiah thing, is one, I feel like one point throughout this series, throughout the documentary, the 10 parts, was Jordan, more than I ever realized, Jordan respected the game and the competition, I think, more than any other part.
Yeah.
So when you disrespect the game that he loves and that he wants to compete in any capacity, if you disrespect that part, then you disrespect Michael. And that's when he'd write you off. And that's that to me was the big Isaiah thing, was that Pistons team, they lost, and win or lose, you need to say, congrats, go get them in the next series. And that was that team would not do that. And imagine what would happen in 2020 if you and Dustin Johnson were playing in a US Open final round and it was this unbelievable back and forth. And you missed a putt on 18 and you just walked off and didn't shake his hand, you'd be vilified.
Right.
You'd be absolutely
for
vilified.
Good reason. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it goes back to the same point about, you know, I was making about Tiger and not cheating yourself. Michael, I think the part I'm going to remember the most about this series, I think a lot of people will, was the end of episode 7 when he starts to cry, just talking about how hard he tried. And you don't need to do this. Like, you don't. But, you know, I want you to see what you can be, because I'm seeing what I can be. And if we're going to be a team, I want to see what we can be as a group. And it made, you know, choked him up, and I got it. It was like this ultimate competitor that not only just wants to win, he also, I think, being in a team sport, wants to see what everybody else can do. It goes to my point about this Tiger thing. I felt the reason I tweeted it is because not only do I get to play against him and I gawk at him a little bit, but I get to try to beat him. Like, how cool is that? Like, there's stories of all these guys, everybody in this whole documentary, everyone that was interviewed that played basketball against him had maybe little moments where they were like, I got it. Like Reggie talking about, like, I could play with him, like I could get it. He's like, in that ego down the road, like, okay, Michael's better than me, but like I got to play against him. I got to see the hardest thing in sports, and where I feel very fortunate to be playing against Tiger, to be playing against Rory, Dustin, all the best golfers in the world, is if I never played on the PGA Tour, but I had the same skill set I have right now, I'm doing the same things I do right now, but I never play on the PGA Tour, I'm just playing at home, how do I know what the best is? I have no idea. I have no idea if I'm far or if I'm close, if I'm there or if I'm not even in the talk. I get to play every week and see where I am. Like, how rare is that? In all walks of life, in anything you do, that's a rare thing to be able to measure yourself up to the best at something. That's sweet. Like, any game that MJ got outscored by somebody, that person not only can say, oh, I outscored MJ. Like, I'm not talking about the soft way. I'm saying, man, I know for one day that I was better than the best. Like, that's what you like live for. So that's why I'm so fortunate to get to play against the best, like literally the best at our sport. Him and Jack Nicklaus. Like, I obviously didn't get to play against Jack, but I mean, Tiger and him seem to be very synonymous with the GOAT, you know, conversation. Obviously, people playing against LeBron and then, you know, MJ then. Like, this stuff is, that's cool to be able to see, to have a benchmark, an actual tangible understanding of what greatness is, not just something that you can make up in your head. And yeah, I mean, and Michael wanted that for everybody. I think it's hard for people like Michael to understand how someone like a Steve Kerr goes about life, because Michael, if he tries really hard at it, he scores 55 points. Steve Kerr tries really hard at it, he scores 6. It's like, you know, people have to find out. I feel like it's hard for him to even grasp what you know, other people go through. But what I do think he got was, I want you guys all to get the most out of yourselves. And that to me, that's going to be the most memorable part about this, is seeing him break down a little bit. I'm sure he was a little bit tipsy. He was drinking a lot through the thing, but I think the alcohol pushed him a little over the emotional limits. I've been there.
I use this a lot. You know, the Goodwill Hunting moment, you know, when he burns the paper, and yeah, goes, you know how easy this is yeah for me. I mean, I do think
that's a great call. That is a perfect call.
But for certain people like MJ, you know, and I think this is one of the reasons that it's so hard for the goatee types in sport to go into coaching or to go into management, because to them, the ball in the basket just absolutely makes
of
sense.
Course.
It's poetry. It's Beethoven, right? And for a journeyman who's trying to just make a roster, make a team, not a great shooter, maybe gets nervous in the moment, all of the things that are Beethoven to MJ is Metallica
sure
turned all the way up sure to them. Sure, it's sure just a really, really noisy, and they're trying to make sense of it. So it's not so easy. I was going to ask, I know you have some notes on your phone. Did you have any points you wanted to point out from the Last Dance that really stood out to you that were just either funny or different or whatever?
I mean, the security team was the best, but I wanted to say this last night, but I figured I'd save it for this podcast. All the commercials I can remember, you know, the Be Like Mike, Be Like Mike, Be Like Mike. Mike is fairly unattainable for, I would say, 99.9% of the world. Unless you play professional sports or you're at the top of your field, like being like Mike is really hard. What I took from that last episode was Be Like Gus, like his main security yes guy. Gus was the coolest. Gus made the most of every one of his days. He pushed himself in a completely different light. You know, I like to relate a lot of sports back to life. He was caring. His wife mentioned anytime Michael called him, whatever, upset, he would get up out of the room, but didn't matter what time, and talk to Michael, go to Michael. And then Michael reciprocated it back. Be like Gus, man. Gus touched me. That was a very cool story. And it was also cool to see the human side of Michael clearly caring about him, like clearly yep wanting, you know, we didn't get to see him obviously be in a hospital or anything with him, but like you could tell when Gus walked out that room and they're about to go play, Michael touched him on the head. It was kind of one of those, like, I'm doing this for you a little bit, man. Like I want you to be able to watch as many basketball games that I can play in as possible. And it's also cool when you see somebody like a Michael Jordan understand how important it is for people to get to watch him, and how rare that is for people to be in person watching him. Someone tweeted about it last night. I think Albert Pujols had mentioned it. He said, Mike Trout's very similar. Anytime you go watch Mike Trout, you're going to see something special. I always thought that that's what we all appreciated about Kobe so much, is every night you ever watched him play any kind of basketball game, didn't matter if they were down 40, up 40, playing the worst team in the league, the best team in the league, he was going to give you 100% of him. I think that that's also something we appreciate, but we take for granted. I mean, that's not something Michael has to do. His season was going to be in the playoffs. He didn't have to do that, but he did it every night. And whether it's out of his own competitive spirit or maybe a little bit to give the kid in the crowd or the guy in the crowd who paid $50 too much to go watch him play, he's like, well, if you're going to pay that 50, I'm giving you a show. I'm going to give you a story to go tell, you know, when you leave here. I thought that was really cool. I mean, so many funny things. I don't know how Leonardo DiCaprio somehow made it back there at the end, not even in a Bulls hat. He's in a UCLA hat. That one shocked me a little bit.
But like super celebrity Leo, I was thinking yeah about it. That had to have been right after Titanic,
right,
where he was just, you know, I mean, Titanic opened and was, I think, was the biggest grossing movie of all time
for
at
sure
that point. You know, he's back there. He wants to just say what's up. You could tell you, I don't know if you run into this, but you know, you being a professional golfer, and let's just say famous. Is it okay to say you're famous? Is that okay?
I mean, it's wrong, but it's okay. Let's go.
I mean,
with that.
I think you're super. Would famous you let listen? I don't want to say super famous. I'm just saying
okay,
famous.
You're yeah, a I mean, famous I would person say if there was a letter on a grading scale below F, I'd probably be the one below F. You know, famous. I wouldn't be like a B list celebrity. I'm not a F list celebrity. I'm like the next letter that you would use down if they went past that one.
Can you give me a celebrity example that you would compare yourself to?
Man, that's a tough
one. Like BJ Armstrong?
Yeah, maybe. But now he's so famous. If I saw him now, he's crushing it. I don't know. I would be like I'd be like the third brother of the Jackson 5 at this point.
Okay, perfect. I'm into it.
But like right now.
So when you
like not back then.
You're at a golf tournament, a pro-am, and you walk by a famous person that's maybe equally as famous as you, and you have that interaction where it's like 30, 20 seconds of like, hey, man, what's up?
Yeah.
How's it going? And there's always that awkward like, All right, well, I'm going to go do my thing. And you could tell that I like that they actually left that in where Jordan's like, hey, man, hey, great win. Hey, good game. And they're both like,
I'm going to leave.
All right, I'm going to go. You're real famous. I'm real famous. We're going to part ways.
We're just going to be famous in different areas now.
Yeah, we're going to just, that's all we really have in common was we were at this stadium. One thing that I took from this that is applicable to today's sport, and I was talking to a buddy of mine this morning about it, is I just didn't realize we talk a lot about, you know, people that overlap, like Vince Carter got to play
against
Jordan and Kobe and obviously LeBron. Steve Kerr, man. So think about this.
He won the next championship too. He won them with the Spurs the next year.
So Steve Kerr gets coached by a young Lute Olson, who Hall of Fame coach. I mean, obviously I'm going to be more impressed by that as a U of A guy, but hey, they were unreal. I mean, Sean Elliott and Kerr and Lute goes to the NBA. I can only guess that there was no guarantee he was going to make it longer than a couple of years. I mean, right? He's going in there. He's this point guard, not very athletic point guard, you know, decent shooter. He had to work to make it in the league. So he plays with peak Jordan.
Okay, peak
wins
Jordan.
Championships. Coached by Phil. He goes to the Spurs, plays with David Robinson and Tim Duncan, coached by Pop.
Yeah.
And then he's a coach himself, wins championships with Steph, Clay, Draymond, and he's going to have Durant. This guy's, I guess, the weave through the NBA. I mean, he is going to be touch so many guys that are going to go down in the most famous.
Like the six degrees of separation, deep. They always say. Like, Steve Kerr will be your link to so many other things.
Steve's Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. One of my favorite parts about the actual basketball, I thought it was very interesting. Well, a couple things about, like, the Jazz team, but it was cool to hear them say that, I think it was Rodman saying that team didn't, no, it wasn't Rodman, it was Kerr saying that the team didn't match up well against the Jazz because they had Karl Malone, who was obviously a force to be reckoned with, and they didn't have like a super athletic point guard, where it made me think back in that time, most of the best players were like a two or a three guard, like a Michael and a Reggie. And Michael was so good at defense that he could play both ways and kind of limit it a little bit. So every matchup would be okay. Obviously having like a Shaq they talked about was difficult because he was just so big, but that team had both, and like they can run a pick and roll, and it's like Michael can't really do everything, and you can't even really have Scotty do everything at that point. So I thought that was cool to hear. The other one, I think this is the biggest part, maybe the biggest takeaway from the whole documentary. Well, two things. First of all, Brian Russell, not Byron, thought that my whole life. I think Michael Jordan, like I said, tweeted last night, Michael Jordan beat him so bad he changed his name in my head.
I think Michael called him Russell's.
Russell's, yeah. I truly think he was that minute, like that. He meant that little to Michael Jordan. Of all the lists Michael's made, he cared so little. He never even spell checked his name. Second, he didn't push off. I'm 100% certain of it now.
I'm with you.
That second angle or whatever, he didn't push off. He literally just had his hand on his leg. And he even said, he goes, I didn't push off. He goes, he was going that way. And he mentions it earlier in the thing. He goes, this guy played on the front of his toes. He goes, if you gave him a head fake, anything, he went towards it. He does it on the last play of his career as a Bull. And he 100% did push off. And it feels good to know that, because it always felt a little bit dirty because it really looks like he pushed him. But that back angle, whatever it is from the baseline, he didn't do it. And it was that one, maybe he made the whole documentary just so we could all know that.
Well, and you know what I thought helped that was showing and diving into Reggie shoving Michael Jordan about 4 feet. You're like, if that's not a foul, then using your left hand to kind of just guide him out of your way is not a foul either. The NBA was a little bit different in the 90s. A thing I was reminded of, a lot of fighting in the NBA. Crazy fighting.
I kind of miss it. I'm not condoning it, but goodness, it was funny to watch. I mean, God, like the best players on the team never actually fight. Like, there's all the, you know, the old stories of like Jeter and A-Rod when they were Mariners and Yankees, and they were, you know, there's a big brawl and they were joking, fighting in the corner. Like, the best players never really fought. Like, in this one, it's like, geez, dude, like, MJ's going at Hall of Famer Reggie Miller, and like, they are full on fighting.
Grabbed his face, dude.
Dude, he almost poked his eye out.
Grabbed his face. I mean, to grab a human's face, Michael Jordan's hands, you know, that rare.
Oh,
air
my
book,
God. It was how big his whole head.
And you're like grabbing the dude's face. I mean, that was intense.
It goes back to what, like, again, the main, I think, respect Jordan gets from his teammates, and he points it out. And this is in general, this is what leaders do. In my opinion, this is the perfect epitome of a leader. And it goes even to the fighting a little bit. He's like, I'm never going to have you ask you to do something I don't do. And that was it. He's like, I'm not asking you to fight my fights. I'll fight my fights. He's like, I'm not going to tell you to go run, you know, run two a days or run sprints after practice, but without me doing it, like I'm going to go do it too. So if you want to do it, I'll be right by your side. I thought that was another thing is like, hey, you don't need to hold me back. Like he even said, he's like, don't hold him back. He's like, I'll fight him. He's not asking Pippen to get in there or Longley.
He's saying
like,
that 20 years later, Max.
20 years later, he's still
he's watching it now. And he's going, I want to, you know, don't hold him back. You're like, I mean, normally people are going, ah, yeah, maybe I was a little aggressive then. He's in the fight again. He just literally took himself back, right back to 1998. did you have anybody that you were shocked wasn't included in the doc? And I'll say mine. I was a little surprised there was never a Shaq interview. And I mean, maybe there was and they just didn't use it. But considering the Magic and they kind of, they touched more on Horace on that Magic team than they did on Shaq and Penny. But I was a little surprised that we didn't just get anything from Shaq because, you know, Shaq's a somewhat of a decent figure in the NBA.
Yeah, actually, that is a good point. I didn't think about him. That would have been a nice one to add. Although I kind of respect the way they did it because Horace was so much more in like the group. So he had probably more to say. Shaq would just be a great voice always to like talk about it. But I don't think Shaq was as involved. Like he didn't have battles with him more than a couple times. You know, they had their relationship, but not, it wasn't like that. I thought that it nailed pretty much everybody. If I'm being honest, I loved all the interviews. I liked that they had Kobe, didn't overdo it because obviously it was not the easiest thing to watch. I thought that they nailed a lot of great things. I wish, I guess just basketball dork me. I wish they would have dived in a little more into the triangle offense because I still don't get it.
Like, I don't get it either.
I've never played it. I kind of get that you run where you always have three on a, you know,
right.
On a side to run through an officer, but I don't really, that's about all I got. I know the shape of a triangle.
I don't know if that would have kept, like Cindy, my wife, watched all 10 episodes. I don't know if she would have been
that
interested in the triangle.
I don't blame them. I just selfishly maybe wanted maybe a side project where I can learn
maybe
about
a 15 minute video where Phil explains the triangle to us. I would have been. So I'll tell you a story. I was doing I did an NFL game this past year for Fox, did sideline, and our analyst was Matt Millen. And of course, great player, you know, GM, all these things. And what I told myself for the week, you know, as a sideline reporter, you know, my job is to get notes on stories that are happening in and around the players, finding stories, you know, humanitarian or otherwise, that are different than what you're going to hear the analysts talk about. My role in the analyst role is different. I mean, it's just not, I'm not in the same world. And then, of course, during the game, I'm talking injuries and all that and talking to the coaches. But I told myself that week, whatever Matt does, I'm gonna sit next to him. So I watched, Max, I probably watched 8 or 9 hours of film in 2 days of this legend Hall of Famer breaking down football. And I have never felt dumber in my entire life. The stuff he talked about, I had zero clue what he was saying.
Right.
You know, and it felt a little like, to your point, the triangle, which I have probably said 50 times in my life had heard 1,000 times. And when you actually see them in text and those guys trying to explain it, I'm like, well, I definitely never understood it. Definitely never got it. I know man to man, and I can kind of play a zone, and that's basically my life.
I mean, I had Aaron Rodgers. Like, I asked him about some football stuff. He has the greatest memory ever, and he was telling me about some of these old plays that he's running. And the dude can remember, like, you know, people talk about the Sean McVay stuff. Like, Aaron does that. Like, it's nothing.
Right.
He's playing in the game. He's not, you know, it's wild. But some of the, like, slang he would, not slang, but, like, you know, the intricate football terms he would say and how the plays work. And he would do a great job if he noticed I was, like, kind of lost. He would explain why, like, one word is used. But it was just so funny because I'm sitting there. I'm like, I think I know a lot about football for, like, the average person. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? Like,
football's a different beast.
Route running and, like, calling plays and what certain things mean. Like, it's just so not... I was so out of my element, but I wanted to be there. You know, I'm trying to, like, I didn't want him to know, but, like, he obviously knew it. No, it's like, I looked at his buddy Eric, and even Eric is like, look, and Eric knows more than I do. And he would look at me and be like, I don't get that part either. I'm like, okay.
Jordan shrug. He's like, I don't know.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
Last question before we wrap, because I don't want this to go an hour.
Yeah,
we just wanted to chat because we both loved the documentary like everybody did. Did you and have you made any Jordan Bulls shoes purchase because of the documentary?
No, I haven't. Although I am thinking about getting some more Jordans. All I know is I didn't make any purchases. I didn't do anything like that. But every single time halfway through, every Sunday, my wife, Lacey, would say, you know, basically, don't get too hype. Like, you got to wait till the morning to go practice. Because I swear to God, I have not had one not full-blown just beast day the day after this, like these Sunday watches. Like, I go, I'm so into it. Even today, I was so into, like, I just wanted to practice. Like, I just wanted to get better. And it's, again, much of my professional golf life and junior golf life was built around this idea of being as much like Michael Jordan's work ethic and Kobe Bryant's work ethic and Tiger Woods' work ethic as possible. So you put that man or one of those men on the screen and show me it, like, behind the scenes. And I'm like, I wish you could play golf at night, because I would have left at my house right after it was done and run to the range. You know, that was it for me. But fortunately, I got the benefit of it. I imagine you, as someone who loves the hats and the gear, I imagine you were a little more on the you got influenced a little to buy things. That's where your hype went.
Yeah, I texted Cindy this morning as she was at work, and I said she bought me a retro Penny jersey and a retro Steph jersey.
Sick.
About 5 years ago as a birthday gift, and they're awesome. They're those like hardwood classic, like the vintage jerseys. And I texted her and I said, hey, what size? Because I cut the tags off because they were itchy. What size were those? And she goes, the jerseys I bought you 5 years ago. Yeah. And I went, yeah, I want to know. I'm very interested in what size they are, because I may or may not be buying a Michael Jordan jersey.
Absolutely.
I feel like it's appropriate for the time.
It is.
Have you played golf with MJ ever? Is that?
No, I've been done a golf course with him. I've seen him play. I didn't bring my clubs. He was doing his thing at Shadow Creek. His big outing or whatever. Justin Thomas took me. It was awesome. Getting to meet him, getting to be around him for like half a day and watch him. I mean, talk about clutch, man. We're all sitting around. He's got pretty messed up golf swing. Everyone starts betting him whether he can hit the fairway three times or not with three balls. Each one was going to count as a certain increment of money, I'm assuming, and gets up there and fairway, walked around, collected. I'm like, this is him, man. He's a bad dude. He turns it on when he needs it. And it was remarkable to watch, because when he was swinging, I had no idea how he was going to do it. And then I also got to hold swing his golf club. And I mean, the grip is enormous. It's
all
bigger
than
the water bottle in front of me. I mean, yeah, it was all the right. It was outrageous. But yeah, he honestly great human from what, you know, as far as like what I got to experience with him, like so nice, engaging, did not blow me off at all. Obviously JT and him are boys. Really cool dude. Feel very lucky to have gotten to meet him. And it feels weird because it's just another person, but it's somebody I feel like that has shaped my life, your life, and so many people's lives. Especially watching this thing, you see how important he has been to people. And that's crazy, because he even says, I just play a game and I don't want to be bigger than this. Like, but I just am. And he kind of takes it in stride, which is cool.
Yeah, when you're that talented, I mean, it's just impossible not to. And I mean, I love that when you think about Michael Jordan and the impact he had, you think about the impact he has and will ever have on the Chicago Bulls. So you start small, right? The Chicago Bulls, then you go to Nike, which, you know,
he might have
Phil Knight. You know,
that's
kudos,
another
man,
part. I had no idea about that. I never heard of Nike as a startup company. Like, that blew my mind.
You got to read Shoe Dog.
That's crazy.
I have it in my house. I'm gonna give it to you next time I see you. I'll wipe it down with a wipe and then let you borrow
thanks,
it.
Man.
It's great to read about Nike, because it almost went under about 500 times. But
that's crazy.
I mean, his influence there, of course, you know, us knowing the swoosh now, and I mean, it's this, you know, global image that everybody in the world knows. And back then, I mean, he's wanting to sign with another shoe company, and then he basically makes the whole basketball shoe thing. And then the NBA. I mean, you hear at the end, you know, 80 countries, 220 countries by the time he was done. And
you know, the influence, all those people showing up to the celebration.
How about
all
on
over the
Olympics?
World?
I mean, now if any best player ever or best player in the league comes through and they're like, I don't want to play the Olympics. It's like, Michael Jordan played in the Olympics, dude. You could play in the Olympics. It's like, I'm sure that helps a little bit as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's cool about golf and what is cool about what we get to do, you know, me as somebody that watches it and you getting to play it is we in the sport we love the most in golf, we have been able to watch the person of our generation that it changed the sport and changed everything, changed the landscape, made golf look different, made golf cool, made people interested in the game in parts of the world that didn't care about it. You know, of all of the sports, you know, it could have been tennis, it could have been volleyball, it could have been all these things, and it was golf that Tiger was came up and played. And I mean, it's special for us to get to see and live the next MJ in Tiger, and maybe honestly, maybe bigger than MJ because of how big of an impact he's put on the sport of golf. That's it for another debate. But I just, you know, I mean, that's the only real comparison. I know you're getting a lot of Ollie comparisons in terms of Ollie's ability to basically change the entire landscape of boxing and be bigger than the sport. To me, Tiger is that. He was that before he turned professional. I mean, when you say hello world and that's all you got to say in an advertisement, I mean, that's people are listening.
Yeah, hello world, and then Michael Jordan's I'm back are my two of the coolest
facts
media things ever. Yeah, Tiger to me probably bigger to the sport than Michael Jordan, just because Tiger, you have the race thing, you know. Golf has always been a stuffy, you know, kind of golf clappy environment. Tiger comes in fist pumping, best player in the world so fast. Changed the purses from, like, you know, the winner used to make like $200,000 when he started. Like, I think the first Masters he won $400,000. Now it's like $2 million. And like, I promise you, it's because of one human, and it's Tiger. So I think Tiger's had probably bigger impact on the sport, but they are very much similar in the way they've approached it. Tiger just went into a market, you know, in the game of golf that probably needed a bit of a change. And he did it, obviously. Michael Jordan changed basketball, but I think basketball would have still been in a phenomenal spot. But honestly, what I go back to, and I can't stand the debate, LeBron versus MJ or who is the best player ever, whatever. I have come to this conclusion, and it's the exact same thing I feel about Tiger. Something I think, two things you cannot argue, or one thing, I guess, MJ and Tiger are both the prettiest to ever, like, prettiest players to watch play their sport. Like, Jack Nicklaus said it on the broadcast at Memorial last year. He's like, I've never seen anybody, he's talking about Tiger, look more conventional at every single aspect of the game. Like, everything he did. Jack, phenomenal golfer, possibly the best player ever. Putted with a glove on, crouch stance, like, not exactly conventional. The way he swung it was beautiful. But like, Tiger, the way he swings it, the way he chips it, the way he, like, everything's conventional. Michael Jordan, the way he dribbles it, the way he pump fakes it, holds in one hand.
The way they look,
the way he flies, the way he floats. Like, yeah, he's just like, that's what you just picture now. Like, that's what Michael changed. He made beautiful basketball to me. Like, it was a thing of beauty. I've said it a million times, you could drop Alien down, never seen basketball and ever, watch somebody play one game and he's gonna be like, that's the best player in the world, just because of what he looked like.
They did that. It's a movie. It's called Space Jam. You should watch it. They actually already made that, and you could dive into it. You know what? I said no Shaq on the documentary as an interviewee. I would have loved to have Tiger there. Just maybe even maybe episode 9 or 10, just to say, I'm assuming MJ was influential in Tiger's life. He would have not been. You know what? Just throwing it out there. Next time you do a Michael doc, Tiger, throw him in there for 35 seconds. You maybe never even heard of the guy. Plays golf, won a few times, and they were buddies. Apparently, they were good friends for a while. I don't know if they're still friends or not. Max, this was fun. I'm glad we did this. We were texting about it, and we were unsure if we wanted to pull it. And
we're,
you know,
media
what?
Guys, we got to fit in.
Well, hey, listen, we are golf people, we are sports fans first and foremost, I believe. And you and I were recording these Sunday podcasts with hard stops so we could be done, so we could watch this thing. And I mean, my wife loved it, watched it with me the whole time. She knew very little about MJ's career, and she kept saying, I just didn't realize how good he was. I didn't realize how good he was. And it's so true. And so, you know what? Last thing is, as I'm watching 9 and 10, and I was a little bummed as it's finishing up, these are things I think about now, is
I was thinking, you know, one day I'm going to get to watch this with my son. You know, one day I'm going to get
great
to watch this with
call.
Henry.
That's
and go,
very, very cool.
And go, dude, like, you don't, you know, when he's 5 or 10 or 12 or 15, whatever, whenever he's obsessed with sports or not or whatever, is to say, like, let's watch this thing about this guy that played basketball before you were alive, because what he did and how he did it and how he always hit the shot. You know, the double pump against the Pacers?
Yep,
and they showed that. Like, it almost went down, man.
Hey, what are you going to do when Henry goes, but Daddy, LeBron's the best player ever.
That's fine. You know what? That'll be his opinion. I'm not going to yell. My life is not in a bubble of screaming about sport. That's your opinion. You can say LeBron's the best. I think there's an argument to be made, but
I agree,
you and I aren't going to debate it.
I'm
you and I aren't
going to
debate it. Wait, hey, last thing, and then we'll go. Is MJ, did he move up in the rankings of like your favorite athletes ever?
Yeah,
has
he
always
he was
been
already
up,
up. He just moved up higher. We mentioned it on a podcast like 3 or 4 weeks ago that MJ said, well, you're going to not like me so much at any of this. I like him like 50 times more.
Like him way more. I couldn't agree with
like
you more.
I don't like anybody a lot more.
It's really hard to.
Unbelievable.
Not to like him. On Saturday, we're going to do a regrip. We're going to do the Walker Cup that Mr. Max Homa played in and set a record. So make sure you tune in. We are not sure of the time because we're working on a special guest. So stay tuned on social at Shane Bacon.
It's not
at Max
Tiger.
Homa. At Max Homa 23.
It's also not MJ.
At,
yeah,
Max
23.
Homa 23.
At Max Homa 23.
You need to get the jersey. All right, we'll check in with you guys on Monday, but tune in on Saturday. It'll be fun. We're excited to watch the Walker Cup at National Golf.
Wash your hands.
Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.